the fact that they delivered both the incredible comfort and the reaction times in this one update is like mind blowing.
Yeah, absolutely. They've shipped an update that has a very low level of interventions, yet it's also quick. The new hurry mode is amazing. It doesn't waste any time. And I think even they're surprised by some of the things they're seeing, some of these emergent behaviors. But it's like it can read your mind. When you see that safety hazard, before you can even lift your hand up to intervene, it's already done the right thing. It really is getting to a point where you see the trajectories it's taking, the smoothness, getting in between tight cars, and you say, that's smoother than I could do it. That's like a professional chauffeur.
But it's going to feel superhuman and like it's reading your mind because it's just better at driving than you are.
When you try it, you won't believe it. So hopefully they get that out by the end of the year more widely. And I'm super excited, especially for Europe and China to be able to try it for the first time. Their jaws are going to drop to the floor. Their heads are going to explode. V13 is really the biggest FSD update ever. It is exactly what we saw at 10.10.
Hans and I have been on a rampage talking with people that have V13. We spoke with JD, AI driver. We spoke with, I almost called him Chuck Norris. Chuck Cook.
He is kind of the Chuck Norris of the Tesla community.
He really is. And he can fly a plane. I mean, that's so freaking badass. We spoke with Chris and Steffi from Dirty Tesla. We just spoke with Amit, who covers sort of the financial side more at a macro level, but he just had an experience with self-driving recently that kind of blew his mind. And we're going to speak to the king now, Mr. Omar from Whole Mars Blog. And anytime I try to bring up your name in the past, it's like a tongue twister for me. And I got it right this first time, so I feel very proud of myself. But the reason why we're talking to everyone with V13 is because it seems like there's been a paradigm shift. Seems like something has changed. For people that follow the story closely, I think all of us have understood very deeply. When I say us, I mean people that are just complete total nerds about the Tesla story and they can't help but breathe and sort of live everything that's going on with the story and understanding the long-term potential, so on and so forth. We felt like there is an end game that will happen as long as Tesla can execute against its AI goals from a compute perspective, from a neural net perspective, from an inference perspective, from a fleet perspective, from an execution perspective, talent perspective, so on and so forth. There are things that they had to do, but if as long as they did it, it was inevitable that they would have a self-driving vehicle. And it seems like V13 is starting the transition of, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this to start. It's starting to transition out of the sort of niche community that thinks about this deeply to sort of like the early mainstream that is starting to be like, oh shit, okay. So they actually might figure this out, right? So like, and the signal that I look for are people that traditionally don't pay attention to this that are now paying attention to it, right? People like Amit, people like Kyle from Out of Spec, right? He's somebody that I really respect because he is extremely neutral about electric vehicle products, right? Even he came out and said, yo, FSD is crazy. And there's more and more people that are starting to be like, yo, and they're not even on V13, right? They're on 12, 5, 6. And V13, from the videos I've seen from the people I've talked to, it's just another level. It takes the everything Tesla did well with FSD, it takes it up to a whole different level, and then it fixes a bunch of other shit that they weren't doing well, and now it's just as good as a human, oftentimes even better. Help me understand how you're thinking about it, given that you've been driving V13 for a week now, it seems, for a while. Where's your head at? Do you agree with my sentiment? And we'll start from there.
Yeah, so V13 is really the biggest FSD update ever. It is exactly what we saw at 10.10. So a lot of people think, okay, at 10.10, they had some special version of the software. It was maybe pre-mapping the studio lot. That's not the case. They actually just had FSD 13 running on those cars. And they were running all night. There were people walking. There were other cars. And there wasn't one safety incident at all. So that was the first demo of FSD 13, and now Tesla's actually ready to ship it to our cars. And just like at the 1010 event, you get in the car, you push the button, and it takes you to your destination and parks. So I do agree that this is going from really a pro user product or a nerd type of product, a super early adopter product, to something that is indispensable for anyone who drives and is really becoming a mainstream product. You know, in the early days, people like me would nerd out about it because we're excited about what happens in the future, but it had a lot of problems that would turn off your average consumer, like hard braking, safety critical interventions being pretty common, and so on and so forth. With this now, it is the smoothest self-driving system I've ever tried. I've tried Waymo, I've tried Cruise, I've tried every system on the market. This thing is able to really mimic what humans do. It's able to do it without hesitation. It's able to do it much more quickly. And I think when people try this version, the no nag combined with the new FSD 13, using the power of that new Cortex cluster, they're going to realize that they need this. Just the ordinary people I've shown, you know, you mentioned Kyle, who previously said, who would want to use this, right? And other people who did not see it with previous versions coming around, and I'm seeing it in my own drives where people are saying, wow, this is incredibly smooth. This is better than what a human can do. Some of the reaction time, it now reacts 2x faster. When someone just walks out all of a sudden or somebody starts driving and you see it just react in a split second like that, that's when it really starts clicking that this is going to be a major step forward above human capabilities.
So there's like literal superhuman reaction to what happens on the road, which is like one of the, I feel like still to this day, underrated aspects of self-driving technology, which is safety. When half of the road, it feels like, at least here in my part of Texas and like sort of Austin Metro, feels like half the road is either drunk or on their phone. I don't know what the fuck these people are doing. Truly. Like, how can you be on a straight road and swerve? I don't understand. Right. And I don't know if Hans can talk about this too, because he's in Texas, a little bit farther away than I am from Austin. But it's like, I almost feel like having straight roads is a detriment to this area because people get so bored, they forget they're driving. Right. So that's me going on a just an inevitable tangent anytime I think about driving here. Sorry, Texans, y'all are literally the worst drivers I've ever seen. Anyway, so the safety aspect of it is super underrated, and it makes sense why a self-driving system would be so safe. It's because it has more eyes than we do. It has 8 cameras. It has a brain that is purpose-built to drive using artificial intelligence that can process information and make decisions potentially 10, 20, 50, 100, 1,000 times faster than a human could, given enough inference compute and enough training, right? And the mitigating, sort of the wall that we've had to navigate through, and we spoke about this with Chris specifically, if I can remember correctly, Dirty Tesla and Steffi, is the comfort has to give the confidence to the driver that it is safe, right? It's not just like, look at our website and look at how good our safety data is. It's you get in the car, you see how it acts, and then you're like, oh yeah, it's got it. And I think that's been such a huge hurdle for Tesla for the longest time. Because how many times did they show the data? Even autopilot is significantly safer than a human, but the human has to pay attention, it has to trust the system, right? But now I feel like we're at the point where the system is just so good. It's just so good at driving like a human would. It drives like the top 1% or better human all the time from both a safety perspective, but also from a comfort perspective, right? And that's the hurdle that I feel like you can only pass if you use artificial intelligence. I don't think you can pass that with heuristics plus LiDAR, radar, HD maps. I think you need a proxy for a human brain, because a human is a human is used to human driving. A human is not going to trust robotic driving, because robotic driving, by robotic, when I say just using heuristics, human code, for those that are not familiar what heuristics means, you're not going to do that, right? So I don't know.
Well, and the other comment that you made, Omar, about the reaction time, I think that the comfort is one half of giving you the confidence, but then those reaction times too, like, oh, it actually saw that safety thing coming before I did and started preparing before I needed to. So like that is like, there's two different things that you need for that confidence, and it's the comfort and it's the reaction time. And the fact that they delivered both the incredible comfort and the reaction times in this one update is like mind blowing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really what's surprising. They've shipped an update that has a very low level of interventions, yet it's also quick. You know, a lot of times if you're late somewhere, you got to turn FSD off and drive yourself, because you're like, look, I don't have time to waste with this, which just makes it a much less useful product. Now with the new hurry mode on city streets, you can set it to hurry, average, or chill on city streets. The new hurry mode is amazing. It doesn't waste any time. And, you know, I think Farzad made a really good point too, which is really, it has to feel like a human. And that's the comment my passengers have been making. They've been saying, you know what? I didn't even think about it. I didn't even realize, or, you know, I forgot that it was self-driving. Galley said to me when we were testing it, oh, I forgot we're on FSD and it's making this huge lane change across a packed freeway. It was so natural, I didn't even think about it, which is a big contrast to previous updates. I mean, the last time I gave him a ride a year ago, he was scared out of his mind. And now it's just completely changed in comfort. So that end-to-end framework, that decision by Tesla to say, you know, after fiddling for years with all the settings and, okay, if there's a stop sign, do this, and writing all this code, they just said, you know what? This is never going to work. Forget it. They threw it all out and they said, we're just going to show it videos of people driving and just have it learn to do what they do. And I think even they're surprised by some of the things they're seeing, some of these emergent behaviors. But it's like it can read your mind. It just does exactly what you think, oh, I want to go around this car, or, oh, I should do this. And then you just see it do that just on its own. Before you can even lift your hand and do something, it's already reacted. When you see that safety hazard, before you can even lift your hand up to intervene, it's already done the right thing. You know, when I was driving down a road downhill and a cyclist came. Just out of nowhere, without looking, just right in front of my car, and the car just instantly slowed down. And not only did it slow down, but it slowed down very smoothly. There was no harshness to it. It was just completely smooth and completely safe. There was another incident where, you know, there was a UPS truck, and it was trying to pull around the UPS truck. And there was a Waymo vehicle coming, and it saw the Waymo vehicle in the gap between the parked car and the UPS truck. It remembered that Waymo vehicle was coming, waited for it to pass, and then gently peeked around. There were instances where someone just jumped out from a row of parked cars to get, you know, to open their car door. And just before I could even process what happened, it had reacted. So that twice as, they said they improved by 2x the performance on photon to control latency. So that really means from the light going into the camera to the car acting on what it sees, they've cut that time in half. And you can really see that across the update.
As you're describing that, like, what goes through my mind is how many people are going to download V13 for the first time and experience self-driving for the first time in their car, and they're going to have a car that can just read their mind, quote unquote. What in reality, what they're doing, what the car's doing, is that it's executing on human behavior faster than the human. That's all it's doing, right? But it's going to feel superhuman and like it's reading your mind because it's just better at driving than you are. It's faster at driving, or faster relative to, like, you know, making an input versus you seeing something, your brain being like, do this, and then your legs and your arms do the thing that you're supposed to be doing, right? That is so incredibly exciting. I'm curious to, like, get your thoughts around, how do you think this is going to impact adoption? Because one of the things with the previous versions that, you know, one of the things that I struggle with is that because I'm so in the weeds with the story, sometimes, as even as hard as I can, I try, it's hard for me to put myself in the shoes of the normal person, not a psycho like myself, right? Like just a normal person and how they're going to view the story and how they're going to view the technology. I have a hard time understanding why every single person, Tesla driver, is not subscribed to FSD right now, like with today's version. But that's, it is what it is, right? They're looking for things that are different than what I'm looking for, right? They're looking for something they just don't have to worry about, that they're going to have a low trust sort of thing going into it because maybe they trust themselves more than a machine. How do you think V13 is going to impact the adoption of this technology?
Look, I think adoption is going to skyrocket. As I was sitting in traffic for, you know, an hour and 40 minutes in LA, and the thing just handled the complete drive from parking spot to parking spot, I was just thinking to myself, how are people in Southern California going to live without this? I just don't know. I think you'd go insane. So I think not only are you going to see increased uptake among existing Tesla unit users, I think a lot of people are going to buy Teslas just to get this because it's that good. And I mean, it's a life-changing product, seriously. And it really is getting to that state where it's just worry-free. You're not thinking about much. You're not worrying about much. It's just kind of push the button and sit there. And almost every time it can make it without any intervention. Safety critical interventions are getting extremely rare. And we haven't seen anything yet. They haven't even shipped the 3X larger model scaling. It really is getting to a point where you see the trajectories it's taking, the smoothness of the trajectory, even, you know, as the road curves, getting in between tight cars, and you say, that's smoother than I could do it. That's like a professional chauffeur. And it's so funny, you know, that I had the Cybertruck, obviously, and it was a few months before it got FSD. And I'm driving this thing. I'm, you know, going outside the lane lines. I'm driving on the little dividers on the highway. You're hearing that sound. And you just realize what a bad driver you are compared to this thing that's just keeping you perfectly in the lane all the time. And I'm going to have a video where I take a 16-year-old who just got their driver's license, and I'm going to have them do the same drive as FSD 13.
That's nice.
And I think it'll be an interesting video to highlight where this technology really is. I mean, you know, the software obviously lacks common sense that humans have, but it's always focused. It's always looking in every direction, and it's become like a professional chauffeur. So I really think that, you know, driving 12 now, it feels primitive by comparison, right? And that was a big leap. But driving it on my Cybertruck yesterday, it was braking kind of harshly. It was starting to move a little more harshly. And, you know, like I said, still way better than anything we've used in the past. But 13 just makes it look obsolete. So I think it really is going to have a big impact on adoption. I think just that button there, right? That button on the screen that says press to start FSD. They're going to send out those free trials. And people are going to get their 1 month of FSD. They're going to roll it out to new countries. You know, they want to roll it out to China, Europe next year. And people are going to get that trial and see that button. And they'll say, maybe I should try pushing that button. And when they push the button, what they'll see will blow their mind, right? 99.7% of the United States has no self-driving cars. Unless you live in Phoenix, Los Angeles, or San Francisco, you have no self-driving cars yet. So 99.7% of the country by landmass, they have never experienced it. And they're going to push that button for the free trial and experiencing the car, driving them from point A to point B, the smoothest self-driving system anyone has in the world. And, you know, it only costs $3 a day. So I think a lot of people will be interested in it, especially with 13.
Hans, you want to jump in?
I was just thinking about the conversation we had with Chris about, you know, ways to incentivize people to actually, you know, do that. And maybe even one additional thing that we didn't talk about with him that I thought about listening to you, Omar, was the ability to just put that button like right big on the screen when they're about to leave and just give them their first drive for free that they don't even have to sign up for. Like there's zero friction. You literally just hit the button and you get that first drive for free. There's no cost or anything. And then if they like that drive, then they can go sign up and get their free trial. And then if they like the free trial, then they can actually subscribe.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is the beautiful thing for Tesla is it actually costs nothing to enable FSD on any of these cars. All of the costs are fixed costs. You have to go buy all these GPUs. You got to hire the smart people. You got to hire the QA testers, all that stuff. It's all fixed. But then activating on each additional car costs nothing. So if you want to have a free plan where people can, let's say, do one free drive a day or one free drive a week or whatever, you can do that. But ultimately, you know, we talk in the community a lot as investors. We're like, how do we get these numbers up? You know, if we could show that uptake of FSD is growing, then I think that would absolutely be material to Wall Street. But ultimately, you can't do it with games. You can't do it with tricks or promotions. The thing just has to be so good that people realize, you know what? Driving without this is like driving without a seatbelt. And that is what they're going to start to realize when they see this. It's like, hey, you know, when I'm eating a burger or drinking a drink or I have to sneeze or something, or I'm just distracted for whatever reason, this thing is going to keep me safe. It's going to keep me in the lines. It's going to, you know, just drive safer than I do. And that, I think, is kind of indispensable. You've already seen NHTSA move to mandate AEB. I think really what you're going to see in the future is that...
Sorry, Omar. AEB, for those that are not familiar.
Automatic emergency braking. Yeah. And I think in the future, they're going to actually move to mandate cutting edge AI technologies like FSD as well. You probably shouldn't be allowed to buy a new car that doesn't have this technology once it's fully mature.
Yeah. So which brings up this like fascinating discussion around what does everyone else do? Right. I think so like this is why this story is so stupid, because it's like, it's so, like, if you don't spend all the time researching this, you sound like a crazy person. There's a reason why the Tesla community has a reputation for being a bunch of crazy cultists, right? It's because people view it from, like, the outside in. They're like, wow, look at these idiots. They're literally just, like, looking at a pie in the sky, and they're like, ooh, yes, please, give it to me. But it's like, bro, just take 40 hours, and that's a lot of time for most people. Take 40 hours to just look at the story from beginning to end. Go into it with an open mind, go into it without an ego, and just look at it for what it is. And to me, it's like if somebody does that, the path is clear, right? So here's what's implied. If Tesla, at this point, I'm just going to say when Tesla releases unsupervised self-driving on their existing fleet plus every new car moving forward, why would anyone buy anything else? Especially when the car you can purchase for as cheap as 30 grand, maybe less with their compact car or the cheaper vehicle, whatever that may end up being. And then you can just press a button and pay at least $100 a month to supervise and maybe $300-$400 a month to not supervise or whatever that pricing structure is. Well, you can buy that metal that gets you from point A to point B with the ability to get you there without you having to pay attention for $30,000 or less. Why would you buy anything else? When the running cost for that exact same thing is potentially cheaper than a Toyota Corolla, what happens then, right? And so my head goes to, unless an automaker is able to, I don't know, figure out a way to put self-driving in their vehicles that's at the same performance and at the same cost sort of level as Tesla, they're cooked. They're completely and utterly cooked. Licensing the product from Tesla and making a car in the next 2 to 3 years, which it already feels like that's too late, because these guys need on average, what, 4 to 5 years of sourcing and on-ramping and development and getting their teams on board and getting approvals and getting investors comfortable with it, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. How do you read that? I mean, the three of us are probably going to agree with the statement, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, there really is a tsunami coming, and I think people have brushed it off. They said, oh, it's, you know, taking a long time. But you're seeing millions of driverless rides happen in the United States today. And that number is only going up. It's not going down. And I think it's actually going to skyrocket, not just keep going up linearly. So You know, I would take what you said, Farzad, even further and say, why would you buy anything else today? I mean, this thing can be leased for $299, and it's, first of all, it's like a dream car. It's fast, it's fun, it's high tech, it's safe. But then you've got this FSD technology where you can literally give it an address, push a button, and have it take you to your destination. For $299 a month, you can get a car that can run this. It's just crazy. And, you know, I think for you're mentioning some of these critics who say, oh, this is kind of a pie in the sky thing. I mean, for a lot of people like me, this thing has been driving us around for, you know, 4 years now, since 2020. And at the beginning, it needed a lot of help. Now it's able to do entire drives on its own. It's getting to the point where it's like an unsupervised experience. Obviously, you need to supervise it. They have the cabin camera. They make sure you're paying attention. But when you get in the car, you push a button. You know, so I'll give you an example. Last night, I was at my parents' house. I parked in the garage of their house. When I left, I got my stuff, put it in the car, got in the car, and I pushed, I said home, go. And the car pulled out of the garage, and it's not really that easy of a garage to pull out of. You have the garage here, and then the driveway's here. So you have to pull out, then turn this way. So it pulls out, it turns, it gets onto the street, pulls out, you know, waits for the gate to open in their gated community, pulls out, takes city streets, takes highways, gets off the highway, goes all the way to my house, and then gets into my driveway and parks. And I got out of the car and I went inside, and that was it. I didn't touch the steering wheel once from garage to garage, right? And if I had been in the back seat, which do not do this, it's not ready for that yet. But if I had been in the back seat for that particular drive, it wouldn't have made a difference. The only reason I'm there is because I need to be ready to take over if something goes wrong. But as these sort of safety critical issues become more and more rare, as they enable things like remote interventions, then it's just increasingly feeling like an unsupervised experience even today. And, you know, they say they want to give driverless rides next year. I think it is in the cards for them to maybe do some first driverless rides in a city by the end of Q4 2025.
And it's just so crazy to me that you can take that car anywhere in the United States that you want to, and you can enjoy that exact experience. Like, you know, Waymo can't do that. Cruise can't do that. Like, and not only that, like, it's being subjected to all sorts of torture testing by people who are trying to find, you know, what are the limitations of the system. And the balls that it takes, honestly, as a company to put a piece of software that's that cutting edge into that operating domain is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point, which is really, you know, for Waymo, they don't necessarily know what all of these problems are. The validation that Tesla customers are putting into this with billions of miles, that's what's really needed to prove the system safe. So you really have this incorrect narrative, right? Sometimes you have these incorrect narratives emerge, such as, for example, the competition is coming, that Chinese EVs are going to wipe out Tesla, that kind of stuff.
The competition is coming. Oh my God.
Yeah. The competition is coming. And they came and went, many of them. But I think really another false narrative is that, you know, Waymo is far ahead in self-driving and Tesla's so far behind, it's going to take years to catch up. Well, what you're actually seeing is Tesla's actually doing more with less. I compared Waymo and Tesla. What the Tesla was able to do in 15 minutes, the Waymo took 43 minutes to do because it won't go on the highway. And that's just, you know, part of their system. They are working on getting it to go on the highway, but the Waymo had more awkward moments. It stopped in the middle of the road because someone was sticking out a little bit. You're just seeing the FSD actually drive better, less awkward moments, faster, using the highways. but with far less hardware. And the use case of long distance automated driving is a serious use case, right? Because what is the number one time you would probably love to have some help? When you're driving for 10 hours, right? When you're driving for 20 hours, if you're doing even a 5-hour drive or a 3-hour drive, this would be a great use case for automation. But with the Waymo, Cruise, Zoox model of a geofenced urban robo-taxi, they're not even trying to do this. So if I, as a consumer, and I am somebody who drives between Silicon Valley and Los Angeles a lot, if I, as a consumer, want something to address this need, my options are really Tesla, Tesla, or Tesla.
Well, there is kind of a third option that I'm curious if you've tried, and that's Comma. Have you ever had a chance to drive the George Hotz self-driving?
Yeah, I have used Comma. I'm a big fan of Comma. I'm actually going to the Comma holiday party in a few days. And Comma is an amazing company. You know, if you actually know the story about the founding of FSD, so Mobileye was the company that made Tesla Autopilot 10 years ago. And they broke up with each other. There was a crash. They were pointing fingers at each other. And Tesla said, okay, we need to make our own autopilot. So Elon Musk calls up George Hotz. And he says, George, I've got a deal for you. I need you to make an ADAS replacement using Pure Vision to Mobileye. I'll give you $12 million, but I'll give you $1 million less for every month it takes, right? So if it takes you 6 months, you get $6 million. If it takes you 8 months, you get $4 million. George Hotz thinks it over and he goes, that's a terrible deal. But he ends up starting Comma. And the goal of Comma is to make a $1,000 dash-mounted device you can just put into any car, any ordinary Toyota, and you can get end-to-end self-driving. And it's very good. You know, if you have like a Toyota or Hyundai or whatever, and getting a Tesla isn't in the cards for you, I would recommend it, right? It requires some installation. It's not elegant and just works out of the box like Tesla. You kind of have to take wires out of your car and wire it into the steering. But it is a great experience. I mean, obviously the hardware is limited. It only has 3 cameras. So the current iteration is not really capable of doing full drives in the same way. It's mostly kind of focused on, you know, driving on the highway and stuff like that. But it's a good, you know, open source FSD like thing. And I think it's going to continue to improve in the future. Like, this really is where we're trending. You know, you hear a lot of debate in the community about like, oh, AI 3 versus AI 4, are they going to be autonomous? What people don't realize is as this technology matures, it'll be possible to take any car and have this sort of dash mounted device. Maybe even Tesla will make one, and that should be able to drive the car. If you just put some cameras around the car, if it's got enough processing power on board, and you train an end-to-end model, that's really all you need to drive a car. You're sitting in the driver's seat, you're looking around. A computer can do the same thing and also drive a car.
And I'm wondering if that's what the other automakers are waiting for. I don't know if they have that level of foresight, honestly, when it comes to this, because I've in the past, I've seen them behave in a very not self-aware
retarded
way. Yeah. All right, I'll let you say it. It has been a very poor showing of foresight. And I think that's been such an eye-opening thing for me to really highlight just how incapable legacy companies are in seeing the future. It's funny we bring this up because we just got done talking with Amit and we were sort of talking about how Apple has this problem too. Like, having that sort of innovative long-term view that, say, like a Tesla has. And the thing we came up with is like,
dilemma.
Exactly. And then like the conclusion we came to is like, if I'm Tim Cook, why aren't I giving Elon 1% of the company or something? Just dilute it, give him the shares and be like, just go to work for me. Just help me out in some way. Like put your, just hitch your wagon to the best racehorse you have in civilization and just let him take you to the promised land. And they don't do that. And they have all the money and power in the world and they choose not to do that, right? I mean, Elon also has bandwidth issues, let's say. But there are some, like, there are some, you know, XAI, the conversation came up from, like, XAI's compute. Just put, like, why isn't Apple leveraging XAI instead of ChatGPT or their own homegrown thing? Like, Apple Intelligence is dog shit. You know, like, why aren't you using something that actually works? So that's been very, very eye-opening to track. Go ahead. Sorry, I thought I saw somebody come off mute. But I'm seeing things. And where was I going with this? Legacy companies, Apple. They're so slow. And then we were talking about Waymo as well. The things we've been talking about for the longest time is Waymo's inability to scale, truly scale, it seems like such an obvious flaw because of the approach that they're taking. And so the question becomes, how quickly can they pivot away from LiDAR, sonar, whatever they're using, right? HD maps and heuristics to a full end-to-end model with inference compute on the car and then training compute somewhere else, right? Because that's really the only way that you can be competitive long-term. It seems impossible to be competitive with Tesla or anyone who comes up with this type of self-driving technology unless you go the 8-camera, 4-camera route, whatever, however many cameras you need, plus inference, plus training, plus data, right? It feels completely impossible. Completely impossible.
Yeah, I think for the legacy automakers, they are going to have to license something. That's obvious. But, you know, what it is, whether it's Tesla's or somebody else, there'll probably be multiple products on the market. Right now, there's nothing even close to the unit economics of Tesla that provides the functionality it provides. I mean, Waymo is losing $2 billion a year, which, you know, they've made incredible technical achievements running the first at-scale driverless service.
It really is awesome.
And it's amazing. I love riding it. But as an investor, you want to actually buy a business that's going to make money. And they haven't really shown a path to do that yet. I mean, just their recent announcement of Miami, they said, well, we're coming to Miami in 2026. This is like an eternity in Tesla time, right? I mean, probably before they get to Miami, Tesla will be running on supervised rides somewhere.
I actually have a $100 bet with someone from X that Tesla will have a robo-taxi ride in Miami, a paid robo-taxi ride in Miami before Waymo.
I could see that.
You know, you could be right. That could happen. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just really about everybody in the world is driving manually driven cars. You know, self-driving cars are like tiny, tiny, and it's going to eclipse everything. Everybody's going to be making this transition. So even when you look at the automatic emergency braking mandate that NHTSA is trying to impose, it's funny, the automakers lobby are coming out and they're saying, this is ridiculous. We can't do this.
Like they did with the seatbelt.
Yeah. They're like, we can't include automatic emergency braking. The technology just doesn't exist to do what you're asking. And they're asking, well, okay, just don't hit anybody. If you see somebody, try not to hit them in the day, in the night. And they're saying, where are we going to get the technology to do this? Well, Tesla includes this in all their vehicles for free. And it doesn't add a ton of cost into the vehicle. You just need a few cameras and a computer. They could license it from Tesla. And I think eventually they will have to license something, whether by law or just by consumer pressure. And I think that's going to be an enormous opportunity for Tesla. It's actually, I think, going to make the earnings from the auto business look small by comparison. I think the licensing opportunity for FSD is actually bigger than the earnings from their entire EV business. And as you start to see this happen, every analyst model of the company is going to break, because now they have to start looking into not just Tesla's cars, but these other cars. And I think there's a good chance it could be a lot like the NACS rollout, where once one guy does it, you know, you now see the U.S. government totally now adopting NACS as the standard. They're now saying this is going to be the official national standard. So complete dominance by Tesla there. I think we could see the same thing with FSD, where no one wants to be the last guy who's using CCS when everyone else is using NACS. You just look like an idiot. Nobody's going to use your product. Similarly, nobody wants to be the last car that can't drive itself, right? And what people are going to find that I think the market doesn't appreciate yet is there is no alternatives. Mobileye's got nothing. Waymo's got nothing. Comma isn't good enough. There's nothing out there yet that can do what Tesla can do. Now, of course, others will do it too, eventually, over the course of, you know, maybe 5 to 10 years, others will catch up. But Tesla's pursuing this in a vertically integrated way to deliver the lowest cost per mile possible. When you look at the Cybercab, you look at the Unbox process, the Tesla network, everything they're doing from top to bottom is to make sure that they just have a robotaxi experience that's not only the safest, not only the smoothest and most natural, but that just beats everyone else on cost. And if you want something you can integrate into a car, a new car, which I believe everyone will have to do, either by consumer demand or government mandate, Tesla is the only option right now. And no analysts are really taking this that seriously. It could all change very fast where, let's say, Ford licenses it. Then, you know, Stellantis, when I was at the 1010 event, who was Kimball standing next to? Someone from the board of directors of Stellantis. If this happens like NACS, very quickly, you could see analysts redoing their models with a long list of licensing partnerships coming in the next few years.
And it's funny you mentioned Stellantis, who just fired their CEO.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like, it's just such a crazy thing. Such a crazy thing to think through. The regulatory thing you brought up, which I find very, very interesting now, is that for the longest time, I felt like the regulatory approval, you know, and I know Elon pointed to this early on, right? He said, feature complete will come, and then it's going to be up to jurisdictions to approve it. I think one of the fascinating things about the Trump administration coming in, which Elon, let's say, risked a lot of reputational damage by throwing his weight behind him and potential political damage, because if Trump were to lose, I would, you know, who knows what the Kamala administration would have done in quote-unquote retaliation. My gut tells me hopefully nothing would have happened, but politics is a very dirty business, especially the legacy politics, you know, like the outgoing Democratic administration I would label as a legacy political movement. It's so fascinating. Like, if you look at all the different things that are happening right now in the world, it's a lot of the legacy kind of dying and the new entrants coming: politics, media, auto, software, right? There's all these legacy systems that are all going out at once, and all these new systems are coming in. The point I'm trying to make is, from the regulatory perspective, it's very easy to see how much influence Elon has now from a politics perspective and a regulatory perspective, because the Trump administration views him in very high regard. And some of the appointments from the Trump admin is part of this, that sort of Elon circle, you know, like David Sachs, Jared Isaacman.
Jared Isaacman.
Right? That's a huge one.
Brendan Carr.
Brendan Carr is another huge one. The FTC, right? FTC. Mm-hmm. These are all...
He's been very vocal on Starlink getting their award pulled.
That's right. And there was a piece that came out a month ago or so, maybe not that long ago, where the administration, the Trump admin, was going to prioritize federal level regulation for autonomous systems, right? So what does that mean for the adoption of self-driving vehicles during the Trump admin? To me, it feels like a giant boon to companies like Tesla, because you're opening the doors. You know, whereas before with, you know, like Pete Buttigieg, which I don't have a problem with, but legacy political movement, what's the legacy political movement or legacy politics or legacy government? Slow, super cost ineffective, bloated, bureaucratic, just ineffective, unresponsive. The Pentagon can lose 40% of his assets, but expect us to be super precise with our taxes, right? It, you know, like the IRS is. So like, that's what I think about. But this new wave, and especially given where we are now, which is very bloated and very slow, even if we get to just normal, the improvement is going to be like a 5x, 10x improvement. So what does that mean from the perspective of approving these systems? what does it mean from the perspective of when companies show that, hey, it is very safe? Like, if you don't have autopilot self-driving equivalent in your car, you will have 5 times more deaths and injuries in that car than if you don't. So how much quicker is the system going to be to respond to be like, okay, we need to do this, right? Of course, you're going to need Congress and so on and so forth to do all of these things. But it's fascinating to think through, because now one of the variables that in my head I thought would be completely outside of the control of the company, now there's influence. Now it's not just like, let's change their mind through public buy-in and through independent media. Now Elon can call Trump and be like, yo, this shit's not getting through. How can you help me out? Let's set aside what that actually means, right? Because conflicts of interest and stuff is something that's very viable that should be talked about and out in the open. But to me, it feels like, and I've mentioned this in the other podcast too, it feels like this is absolute base case scenario for a company like Tesla in the coming years outside of a black swan event. And I wonder how much of the recent market movements, this is sort of what Amit alluded to when we spoke to him yesterday, how much of this is, like, how much has the market realized this dynamic, right? Which inevitably helps Tesla become a significantly more successful company than it is today. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even see it as really a favor to Elon. I ask myself, why has the Biden administration from 2020 to 2024, a period where we've seen driverless rides expand to multiple cities and millions of driverless rides a year, why do they not have a federal framework for self-driving? This is in our national interest. It's key to NHTSA's safety objectives. We should be doing everything we can. Regulatory should not be the holdup. It should only be technology. So I just ask myself, why did the Biden administration not pass anything? I mean, they had a couple bills that floated around in Congress, but you know how Congress is. They didn't get anything done. Now with a Republican majority in the House, in the Senate, and a Republican president in the White House, this is something they're now considering, and I think they're going to be able to get it through. With the current regulatory regime, you know, when Tesla announced unsupervised, they said, starting with California and Texas, and we're going to get to the other states later, right? Right now, autonomous regulation is entirely on a state-by-state basis. So to get your self-driving cars working in all 50 states, you need to deal with 50 different regulators. Well, what if you're driving to Las Vegas and you cross from California to Nevada? Does your car just stop driving when it crosses state lines if it doesn't have the right permit? I don't know. It's a big pain in the ass, right? And imagine being a Tesla customer, but you live in Vermont or, you know, Rhode Island, right?
God forbid, Delaware.
Yeah, Delaware is definitely getting the attention last. But yeah, if you live in some random state like that, then, you know, you're just kind of screwed. You kind of just have to wait. And that's not really fair. If we can actually get a national framework passed where you have a national regulator, whether it's NHTSA or another body, certifying self-driving cars as roadworthy and managing issues related to crashes and monitoring them, pulling them off the road or introducing human supervisors when necessary, when a problem is detected, have that at the national level, it makes sense. It's interstate commerce. These cars are driving between state lines. The federal government, right? We don't have California and New York each have different standards for cars. We have one national FMVSS, Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. And autonomy should be handled the same way. So if they can get this done, it really paves the way for Tesla to launch a robotaxi service nationwide, perhaps years faster than they would have otherwise. And for years, we heard the complaints of so many Tesla fans, you know, who were left-leaning, who maybe started loving the company because they believed in fighting global warming or climate change or whatever. And they threw a fit when Elon started talking about politics, when he bought Twitter, when he started supporting Trump. They almost had a brain hemorrhage. And they said, he's destroying the company. He's destroying the brand. It's over. They're never going to recover from this. And I just told people, look, just trust this guy. Every time I've ever doubted this guy, I've been wrong. When he said, hey, we're taking the radar out of these autopilot, I said, really? The radar? The thing that stops me from hitting the other car in front of me when I'm going 80 miles an hour? You want to pull that out and go with cameras? I'm a software engineer. I understand that computer vision doesn't work that well. But he did it, and the self-driving I have now is miles ahead of anything I had when they were using radar. So I said, yeah, trust this guy. I think he's got a plan. And what ultimately matters is not if some liberal is a little bit pissed off, you know, they'll get over it. You know, they're still secretly driving Teslas. Even AOC's got her Tesla, you know. I think that kind of says everything, you know. You're like, ah, I hate this guy, but, you know, I love the car. You know, you see some of those bumper stickers. And, you know, most CEOs would be way too scared to do that. But Elon knew that, look, if some people get a little upset, that's, you know, if they don't buy the car, okay. But we're going to get these regulatory changes made. And really not just on this, but in so many fronts. I mean, in going to Mars, right? In terms of what we need for Neuralink, in terms of what we need for the Boring Company, in terms of what we need for Starlink, you know, getting Americans connected to the internet. So many things. And he took a risk that might not have paid off, but he made sure that it did. And I think this, you know, this rally really did sort of kick off after the election. I think people are looking at this and saying, okay, with a government that's supportive of what he's doing rather than hates what he's doing, things could materially improve over the next couple of years, particularly with autonomy regulation, which has been a big roadblock in terms of what they're doing. You hear people say all the time, okay, well, you know, they could solve autonomy from a technical perspective, but I don't know about the regulators, right? The world of tech is one thing. The world of politics is a different thing entirely. But over the next 4 years, or at least the next 2 years, when we have this Republican majority, I think we have a really golden opportunity to get this done. And that's really exciting.
100%. I think the marriage of like artificial intelligence and politics is inevitable, completely inevitable. And that was one of the things that we've sort of identified on this channel is like, I was to think about long-term direction is like, that is such an obvious trend as artificial intelligence systems, self-driving, ChatGPT, Sora was just released today, image generation, video generation, content generation, whatever.
Yeah,
put on the list, right? Labor. It's just, all of these things are going to hit people's lives in so fast and so brutally, right? Brutally positives and sometimes might be brutally negative, right? So without a doubt, what this means is that it's gonna hit people's politics. It's just going to hit their politics, right? So this marriage is coming regardless if people like it or not. You were talking about AOC and her Tesla. How sick would it be if Tesla gives her V13 right now? Tesla, if you're watching this, beam V13 to AOC. And AOC, if you're watching this, come on the channel. Let's talk about it. Maybe we'll talk about other stuff too. This is America. We gotta get along,
voters,
right?
Are going to kill her. She can't come on this show.
No, she would lose her entire voting base, unfortunately. I don't know. I think... You know, what's interesting about AOC is that she's clearly a very intelligent individual. I think her right is in the right place. Her heart is in the right place. But I do think her approach is either tainted by incorrect assumptions. Here's what I think is happening, just to take this conversation in a slightly different direction for a minute, just because I was thinking about this over the weekend. I think there is like a legitimate thing that has happened in society where very wealthy, powerful people in the past have abused the system at the expense of many. Like the Sackler family is the perfect example of this. These are extremely wealthy people that use the pharma industry to get insanely rich and literally kill people. So I understand the stigma. The problem is that this is not really the truth for every person that has power and money. I think a lot of times what happens is people project what they think they would do if they were billionaires if they didn't check themselves, and they assume every billionaire is going to do that. And that's why you have the world that we live in now from that part of the political spectrum, like the far left. I'm not saying AOC is this person, but I'm saying like part of that. And that's why Elon gets the label that he gets. It's because rich, powerful person automatically means bad, right? And then they become a villain automatically. I don't know if we live in that time. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I'm sure there is like the top 10%, maybe the top 1% of extremely wealthy, powerful people in the world, either public or private, I'm sure are fucking evil. I totally get it. Elon doesn't strike me as one of those guys. On the other side, he strikes me as one of the guys that's actually keeping civilization in mind through his actions. Just literally look at what he's done. I worked as one of his companies. Like, that company changed my life entirely, financially, professionally, everything. I don't think that company exists without somebody that actually wants to do the right thing. Anyway, I digress. I don't want to turn this into a different kind of
discussion. No, I think it's a good point. I think really the sort of anti-wealth sentiment in American politics really stemmed after the 2008 financial crisis, where it was perceived that wealthy Wall Street bankers who were just making obscene amounts of money tanked the U.S. economy and froze credit markets, you know, just ripping people off, really. And that's where kind of this sort of Occupy Wall Street, you know, tax the rich kind of sentiment started. And
they kind of did in some respects. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there was a lot of validity to that. And I think Elon is somebody who, when he started becoming powerful, his opponents tried to kind of channel that onto him. Okay, you're the world's richest man. Rich is bad. But you really take a look at, you know, you dig into this claim that he is the richest man. The guy's got no cash. You know, he's got billions in debt. The only thing he's got that's valuable is stock in these companies he's created, that he's made some of the largest and most innovative companies in the world. And what people miss is, you know, he owns 20% of Tesla. So for every dollar he has in Tesla stock, he created $4 in wealth for other people. You know, you hear this sentiment a lot. I saw, you know, one of the Elon haters tweet today, oh, you can't get $300 billion in wealth without exploiting people. But this is kind of an incorrect perception of wealth, that you had to take it from people. The reality is he got rich creating companies that made a lot of people extremely wealthy. Us as investors, the employees, the suppliers, so many people, right? He's really created all this wealth. And, you know, to really look at him as just some rich guy, you are sort of missing the fact that he has nothing except the companies that he's created, which have value only because he has worked insanely hard. So if you work hard and create a great company that has a positive impact on people's lives, changes the world, makes a lot of your co-investors rich, this is something that we want to vilify in this country. Right. It just doesn't make sense when you dig into it.
100% agree. Yeah. The argument that I hear too is like, well, you know, the people that work for him, I've heard this 1,000 times because I used to work for Tesla, is like, he drives his employees to the ground. He's an evil boss, blah, blah, blah. You know, the people work so hard. And I'm like, number one, no one's forcing anyone to work at Tesla. Last I checked, it's incredibly difficult to get hired at Tesla. So you got to go out of your way to get hired at Tesla. And then they're like, hey, here's our expectations before you even get hired. Here's the expectation. I know they do this at SpaceX. I know they do this at every single company. Here's the expectation. You're going to work like crazy. We're going to reward you like crazy. Are you sure? And then when you say yes, you get your ass kicked for 4 years plus, or 2 days, depending on your tolerance level. And then you get rewarded if you do a good job. And if you don't do a good job, you leave. That, you know, and when I hear that rhetoric, I'm like, it's like, that's the only thing they can hang on to, is that he drives his people crazy. I'm like, no one's forcing anyone. Anyway, I'm going to.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what leadership is.
Yeah.
You know, if you say it's just the people, it's just the people. Well, then why don't we see companies that are coming up with new ways to build a rocket and land a rocket and make a car drive itself and make a robot walk around? Why are we not seeing this many companies if it's just the people? I mean, All great companies, like you talk about Apple in sort of their glory days, and people say, man, Steve Jobs was an asshole, but he pushed us. He didn't accept good enough. He pushed us for excellence. And man, it was painful, but those were, you know, the most rewarding days of my career, because we really made something special. We made something that changed the world. And that's really what a leader is. So, I mean, just, you know, the foresight for autonomy. You know, they were an electric car company. That's all everybody was thinking. They were saying, well, what's the market for these electric cars? And he built up this fleet and he said, well, we can use the data from all these cars to train a model that could drive the cars. And now that intelligence is actually worth more than the car business itself, in my mind. And then, you know, a lot of people would pat themselves on the back right there. Oh, we decided to make the cars self-driving. That's already way more innovative than the rest of the industry. They said, hey, well, what if we put this intelligence in a human body? And you saw those videos of Optimus today, the new videos. It's walking down a hill. It's slipping and falling, and it's
getting back. That's what I look like, walking down a hill.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just incredible. And, you know, you think about, okay, maybe it's a $5 trillion opportunity for unsupervised driving. This could be much bigger than just driving. This could automate anything, not just driving.
That's me right there.
This could take the company to, you know, I think Elon threw out a number. He said, I think maybe $30 trillion.
20, and, I think, was the number.
I mean, we're talking here. We're kind of in between 1 and 2 trillion. I think when you really look at this AI technology, and I think as the auto business stabilizes, the market is looking more and more at the AI opportunity here rather than worrying about automotive gross margin. And the opportunity is just massive, and I think they're uniquely positioned to capitalize on it.
Go for it, Hans.
Yeah, I just think it's crazy that, you know, when you stop to think about the fact that after AlexNet, Elon immediately started paying to put cameras in cars, even though they didn't have a way to recoup money from that investment yet. Like, it was just immediately obvious to him from first principles that, oh, camera, like, computers can use cameras to understand the world. We are going to need this data, and we'll make it valuable. And yet now, after all of these years, after everything that has been shown and proven that is possible with AI, there still aren't any other car companies that are paying to put cameras in their cars. Like, it's kind of a twofold epiphany about leadership. Like, his vision at that point in time to know, wow, like, this is incredibly important. We need to do this, and we need to, you know, like, it's going to cost us money, but we're going to make the investment. And then to look at how slow and dumb other car companies are that even today still won't put cameras in their cars.
And there's a way to quantify this risk, right? They put in about $2,000 worth of parts and processes, right? Between the inference computer and the camera system in the car for years before they realized not even $1 of ROI on that in an industry where no one else is even close to make a profit on that product without the $2,000 of additional cost. Okay? So like they are overburdening themselves in an industry that no one else can make profit on. And they're still making a profit, and they still haven't fully turned on the ROI on that $2,000 of hardware.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point you bring up about AlexNet, because, you know, in 2012, we had just realized you can train a neural network on a GPU, right? AI was nowhere. It was like, oh, hey, wait, you can train a neural network on a GPU. This is actually pretty big. And they got a state-of-the-art image recognition benchmark. This was just 2 years before Tesla put Autopilot in their car, just 4 years before they started working on their own version of Autopilot. And he actually had the foresight to realize that, yes, as nascent as it is, computer vision is actually going to be able to drive a car one day. And people thought he was nuts. And that is leadership, right? You can have the best people in the world. If they're told to do the wrong thing, that's going to have a huge impact on where the company is. I mean, you look at Apple, you look at Google, they've got all the smartest people in the world. And they just don't know what to do. They're out of ideas with the iPhone. You know, they're putting out products like the Apple Vision Pro. That's the difference between Jobs era Apple, a product-focused company, and finance-driven Apple and operations-driven Apple that we've seen since his death.
So true. It's funny now that Apple Vision Pro has come up as a failure two times in a row now. You and Amit both brought it up as a shit product.
Well, I actually have an Apple Vision Pro and I really like it.
It's impressive technology. It's just I don't have a use for it.
Exactly. It's impressive technology, but even someone who wants to use it, you can't figure out how to use it. It's painful. You know, it's a flop.
Yeah. Huge flop. I think it's funny you guys walk through that sort of like leadership example with Elon. And I know we got you for three more minutes, Omar. I want to be respectful of your time. So we'll wrap it up here in a second. That's what it takes leadership to do something like AlexNet so early on, right? So, but here's what's crazy. Like if you go back to like the root of like, how do you even come up to that solution, right? Number one, you have to find and identify that this is the thing you need. Then you have to have confidence in a decision that you made that says, holy shit, no one else is doing this. It seems far-fetched and it seems extremely early, but it's obvious that's what we have to do, right? And then you got to convince a bunch of people that this is the right thing to do. And then you have to fight through everyone telling you it's not the right thing to do. Right? That's crazy. But that's what separates, it's so true. That's what separates a true leader, a true entrepreneur versus everyone else, versus a doubter or just an operational person. You know, operational people have their value. As you can see with Apple, it's making a lot of people very wealthy at a very predictable rate. But if you're trying to 100x, 1000x, if you're trying to change the world, that's the only way you can do it. And if you want to be extremely efficient and ultimately successful, those are the qualities you have to embrace.
Yeah, that's leadership.
Yeah. Omar, thank you so much for making the time, dude. Any parting words and let people know where people can find you.
Well, you can find me on X, Holmar's blog. You can subscribe to me, Holmar's catalog on YouTube. I think my username is Holmar's. And I just can't wait for everyone to try FSD 13. You know, they're really doing it. We haven't even seen the full impact of this Cortex cluster in Texas. It's changing everything. When you try it, you won't believe it. So hopefully they get that out by the end of the year more widely. And I'm super excited, especially for Europe and China to be able to try it for the first time. Their jaws are going to drop to the floor. Their heads are going to explode.
It's going to melt their brains.
They go from 5-year-old autopilot to FSD with no nag, FSD 13 with no nag. And that monetization opportunity, even for supervised FSD unlocking as they go international, I think 2025 is going to be a huge year for Tesla between FSD 13, between these new models, these new car models that they're introducing, the build out of the cluster. I think it could be the biggest year in Tesla's history.
And we're not even talking about the bot.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole other podcast episode.
We're going to bring you back, Omar. Thank you so much, brother. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Of course. Awesome. I'm going to hit end record here.